We're exploring the GOP's post-Trump era identity here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. So will the Republican Party advance Trump's interests and cast a shadow on the Oval Office? What tactics will the president use between now and January 20th? How do you feel about the president potentially launching a bid for president and running counter Biden inauguration events? Will Republicans follow in lockstep? It's 800-642-1234. Charlie Sykes is founder and editor-at-large for The Bulwark, a conservative political news site. He's a former longtime conservative talk show host on Nothing But WTMJ in Milwaukee, and his most recent book is called How the Right Lost Its Mind. Charlie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
So for years, you were an influential voice of the conservative movement and the GOP in Wisconsin. But since you've broken with your party over Donald Trump, do you still consider yourself a Republican?
Oh, no. No, I haven't for some time now because I'm not sure what it means to be a Republican. The Republican Party, when they had their convention this last summer, didn't even bother to have a platform. All they basically said was, whatever this guy wants. So I'm not even sure what that identity means. I consider myself a political orphan now.
A political orphan. Yeah. When you look at, here we are 43 days until inauguration, the Post reported this weekend that just 27 Republicans in Congress have acknowledged Joe Biden's presidential election. What will this mean for our country moving forward?
Well, I think the damage is going to be long term. And I think it's a very interesting choice by the Republicans. Interesting being somewhat a weak word. Look, this should be the lowest hanging fruit of American politics, acknowledging the results of a Democratic election that was not close, that was decisive. It's one of the basic rituals of a constitutional republic that we acknowledge the results of an election and then we support the peaceful transfer of power. The fact that the Republican Party has not been willing to do that is an indication of how I think it's been transformed by Donald Trump. And I think the damage is long term. There's damage short term, which we can talk about in a little while. Long term, I think this is an attack on the integrity of our democratic process. If you have half the country that does not believe that the presidential election was legitimate, that doesn't believe that Joe Biden is the legitimate president of the United States, that's a real problem going forward, because our institutions and our democratic norms are very, very fragile. It is a choice that we make. It is a matter of belief. And if we shatter that belief, if we undermine that, I think we've done long-term damage to the country.
When you look at conspiracy theories and attacking, as you say, the legitimacy of the election, the lies about votes being thrown out, what do you think that, you know, why do you think, I guess, you know, some Republicans have been so willing to embrace these false narratives?
Well, I think you need to divide it into several categories. You do have a segment of the country that believes these stories. Others who just, you'll keep hearing that there are problems, even though they tend to be baseless. And then you have the elected Republicans, particularly in Congress, who simply are afraid of antagonizing the Republican base, afraid of antagonizing the president. And I think they made a calculation early on. I think they thought, okay, you know what, we're not going to jump to acknowledge the results of the election, because give President Trump some time to psychologically get over the defeat. You know, sooner or later, everything will work out. You know, today is the Safe Harbor Day deadline. A week from now, about 8 days from now, what is it? No, 6 days from now. The Electoral College actually votes. So this thing will resolve itself. So they figured that they would, you know, give it all some time. But what's happened is it's also created space for this fire hose of lies and disinformation, these various conspiracy theories. And I think at this point, it becomes harder and harder for them to find that exit ramp, because so many Americans have been falsely led to believe that somehow there was something nefarious, even when court after court says there's no evidence of wrongdoing, even after Republican officials in places like Georgia and Arizona stand up and say, folks, these stories are not true. This was one of the safest safest elections, most secure elections that we have ever had. It doesn't make any difference. So Republicans thought that they could finesse this. I think that the damage is growing day by day, though.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Charlie Sykes, founder of The Bulwark. He's giving us his take on the future of the GOP. Are you a Republican? How do you think President Trump has changed the party? How do you see the GOP evolving after President Trump leaves the White House? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie, for the most part, Republicans have embraced the presidency, as you said, and support President Trump, support him running again in 2024. Why do you think that Donald Trump appeals to so many Republicans?
Well, I think the part of it is he's given them some of the things that they wanted. That if, in fact, you're willing to overlook his character, if you're willing to overlook the way that he has handled himself, then you could say, look, we got the tax cuts we wanted. We got the regulatory reform that we wanted. We got the three Supreme Court justices. So it's worth the trade-off. The problem is that for some of us, the trade-off was just too much. You know, that Donald Trump was so, you know, manifestly unfit for the office that it wasn't worth those policy choices, his lack of empathy, his lack of honesty, all of those things. But also, I think that what we've seen is the transformation of American politics. Many of us thought that politics was about policies or ideas, when in fact it's become more about identity, it's become more about attitude, it's become much, much more tribal. So to a certain extent, what's happened is people have decided, I'm on this team. Negative partisanship has exploded. It's hard to understand American politics without understanding the number of people who would say, yes, Trump is awful, but those Democrats are so much worse.
Yeah.
You know, what about those Democrats? They are socialists. They are Marxists. They believe in critical race theory. And therefore, I'm going to overlook all of the problems on my side because I dislike and fear the other side so much. So I think that that's been a huge factor as well.
Yeah. So identity politics looming large. Critics have said that, Republican officials are afraid to confront or challenge President Trump. They're afraid of his sway over the party's base. Is that fear justified?
At the moment, it is somewhat justified. On the other hand, sometimes you do have to stand up. I mean, I think it's rather extraordinary what the governor of Georgia, the secretary of state in Georgia, the governor of Arizona have done. Also some officials in Michigan and Pennsylvania who have said, look, we are Republicans. We might have even voted for Donald Trump, but we are going to stand up against him when he says that we should illegally nullify the election. So it is possible to do this. I'll be interested to see how it plays out. I wrote a piece yesterday where I said, you know, it shouldn't take courage to do the right thing. It shouldn't take courage to say that facts are facts and that we need to do our job and uphold the law. But right now, it does feel like that if you do stand up, you are putting yourself at risk. I happen to be affiliated with people who basically think that maybe you ought to take that risk once in a while. Otherwise, you basically just become completely tribalized in your politics.
We're discussing what the next chapter of the Republican Party may look like with political commentator Charlie Sykes, founder of The Bulwark. Should the Republican Party reinvent itself, or should the party continue to follow the example of Donald Trump with a more populist message? What are you watching for in the next 43 days leading up to Inauguration Day? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Charlie Sykes here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing President Trump's influence over the Republican Party and how GOP leaders will respond after he leaves the White House. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent days, Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah called President Trump's leadership on COVID a great human tragedy. With the president in denial of his election loss, Romney told CNN last month,
"You're not going to change the nature of President Trump in these last days, apparently, of his presidency. He is who he is, and he has a relatively relaxed relationship with the truth, and so he's going to keep on fighting until the very end."
Should Republicans stand by the president's rhetoric and his false claims? What do you think the future holds for the party? 800-642-1234. We have political commentator, founder of The Bulwark, Charlie Sykes, is our guide. So, Charlie, you know, in recent decades, as we started out the conversation about values and what the values of the Republican Party are, the party has in the past promoted conservatism, small government, low taxes, limited regulation, free trade. It's also about socially conservative, opposing abortion and same-sex marriage. What do you think the party's values are today? Where do they stand?
I think it's a very tough question because I don't think this is a party that's based on values and principles or agendas right now. And I do think that it is more like a cult of personality than it is like a set of agenda items. Look, I sense that the Republican Party is much better in opposition than it is as a governing party. What is the Republican congressional agenda right now? What is the president's policy agenda right now to deal with the problems facing the country? So I think that is one of the problems that the Republican Party has faced, that they made the Faustian bargain, that they said, okay, all right, so Donald Trump is, you know, has all of these flaws, but we're willing to look the other way. And in a Faustian bargain, you get a lot of things you want, right? You know, you get you get wealth, you get beautiful women, all these things. And then you find out that the price you're paying is way higher than you expected. And I think that's what the Republican Party has experienced, to the point now where they have to sit by where the president is the vector of disinformation. You have the president of the United States who is putting out utterly false conspiracy theories. These are the kinds of things that you used to only find in the far reaches of the fever swamps. Most responsible Republicans know that the president, what the president is saying is false. They know that he is lying. They know that it is potentially dangerous, and yet they've gone so far that they're unwilling to push back on them. And I guess I have to ask that as the president is actually pushing to overturn the results of a Democratic election, was it worth it even to get those judges? Because the whole point of the judges, right, was to protect the Constitution, to make sure that our constitutional republic was preserved. And yet, is it worth the trade-off when you're watching a president who is engaging in what really amounts to a coup in broad daylight, where the president of the United States is actually calling up legislators saying, can you throw out the votes of 7 million Americans? And this is an extraordinary moment here. This is not normal politics. This is not what a lot of people, I think, signed up for when they said, hey, I'm a small government, fiscally conservative, socially conservative Republican.
I want to look specifically at COVID and the administration's approach to COVID-19 and this pandemic. Has that made any impact on the party now or going forward?
Well, it has in some dangerous ways. I think the way in which the pandemic became politicized is a real warning sign about the divisions in our country. It's been sort of a test case of disinformation. Look, two things are reality checks, you would think, the ultimate reality checks. A pandemic that kills hundreds of thousands of Americans and an election. When you have a large segment of the country that refuses to accept the reality, then you realize that we are in a very, very dangerous situation. So with the coronavirus, the one thing that I think was the most surprising to a lot of people is the way basic things like social distancing and wearing of masks became ideological. It became partisan. It became a signal of political tribal identity. And I'm afraid the same thing's going to happen with the vaccines next year. I think that we're going to have a culture war about vaccines, just like we had a culture war about masks. Now, why did that happen? I mean, the science is very clear. The scientists were very clear about what we needed to do and what would happen, and it turns out they were right. And when we were looking for, when this country desperately needed leadership from the White House to tell us the reality of the danger, what we needed to do, instead, we had a president who said it's going to magically disappear. It's going to go away. Maybe we got to talk about injecting bleach into people's bodies. And I think that that was a huge blunder. And I think history is going to look back on this as a very, very strange and tragic episode in American history.
Charlie Sykes is with us, founder, editor-at-large of The Bulwark. He's giving us his perspective on the future of the Republican Party, where it goes next and where it has been during this administration. With your thoughts along the way here, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jimmy now, joining us from Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy. What are your thoughts on the party? Hi.
Well, I voted for Republican for president from 1976 until the second Bush administration, when I kind of had it with the Iraq war fiasco. And I wasn't no big Hillary Clinton fan, but I voted for her because I knew what Trump was, especially what he said about John McCain. I mean, that was a breaking point for me. I could have maybe voted for Kasich. I'm not a fan of his anti-union activities, but he's at least got some experience, both legislative and executive experience. But I don't know how I go back to a party that can't even come up with a platform of what they want to do for the next 4 years.
So Jimmy doesn't see the vision anymore with the Republican Party. The platform is gone for Jimmy. What do you make of that, Charlie?
Well, I think it's voters like Jimmy that are responsible for Donald Trump being a one-term president. That one of the things we did see a lot of people who voted for Republicans down ballot but said, I'm just not going to vote for this guy. Look, Donald Trump was an incumbent president of the United States who was defeated by, I think, more than 7 million votes. More than 80 million Americans voted to fire him. And I think it's because they watched the way he handled himself. They watched the direction he was taking the country, and they rejected. This is a real problem for Republicans. I mean, Republicans have lost, and I've lost track of this. How many? Maybe you can correct me. Have they lost the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 now presidential elections? I'm not sure. Yeah. Do you know what the number is?
I don't know offhand, but that could be right. Yeah.
It is an extraordinary record, and I think what's happening is that they are losing a lot of the constituents who they will need in the future. Now, we need to acknowledge that Republicans did relatively well in 2016, and I think that I'm talking about 2016, 2020, and a lot of them are looking around going, hey, you know what we've done with Trump, ignoring the dog whistles, supporting his lies and his approach to government spending. This has worked out for us, but I do think that this is a party that has really lost its vision. And if Donald Trump does run in 2024, or at least says he's going to run in 2024, what that does is it freezes the party for another 4 years. Rather than moving to a new generation, rather than turning the page, rather than addressing some of these problems, they are simply going to continue to be in the shadow of this man who I think is in the process of disgracing this political party.
Let's bring in Willem now in Colfax. Hi, Willem. What would you like to add?
Well, I think that everything there was to know about Donald Trump was knowable before he became president. And I read somewhere that the Republicans were concerned that he was going to run as an independent, so they helped him. And without their help, he would never be president. And for that, I will never forgive the Republican Party, because they all swore on a Bible when they became politicians to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. And I would say that Donald Trump falls into the latter category because it is, like you said, his in broad daylight coup, this constant assertion, and none of them having the courage to defend the United States. I mean, this is an embarrassment to this country and the world. The whole world is watching as this ridiculous man makes a mockery of our democracy. And they don't have the courage with the exception of a few people, Ben Sasse and a few others, none of them have the courage to defend to defend this democracy, basically. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and Willem brings up the eyes of the world are watching us, Charlie. What is our position then as it stands as a world leader?
Well, also as the symbol of democracy, you know, if what's happening now was happening in another third world country or emerging democracy, we would be deeply alarmed. But he also made a very important point that I don't want to gloss over, which is that what Donald Trump is doing right now is not a one off. It's not out of character. It's not like, oh, Donald Trump is lying and pushing conspiracy theories because he's upset over losing. This is who he has always been. This is completely consistent, going back to when he launched his political career by spreading the birtherism conspiracy theory. His whole life he has been the con man. And the fact that Republicans knew this, the fact that Donald Trump told us who he was, the fact that he has consistently been who he is one of the most disturbing elements of all of this. Nothing should come as a surprise.
We're talking with political commentator Charlie Sykes this hour about what the GOP will look like after President Trump leaves office. You can join in. We'll pick this up after news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're taking stock, discussing the future of the Republican Party here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has stayed relatively silent on President-elect Joe Biden's win. He has not yet explicitly used his name when referring to, quote, the new administration. Here is McConnell talking with reporters last month.
We're going to have an orderly transfer from this administration to the next one. What we all say about it is, frankly, irrelevant.
How do you see Republicans working with Biden? Will there be an ability to move policy forward? And if so, where do you see openings for compromise? 800-642-1234. We have conservative political commentator Charlie Sykes, who is our guide. Let's take another call now. Jeremy is with us from Racine. Hi, Jeremy. What would you like to add?
Thanks for taking my call. Charlie, moving forward, putting Trump aside in regards to his rhetoric, is it time to maybe have a discussion on a single standard for national elections, federal elections now? Kind of set down some guidelines for every state that must follow instead of having each state having their own laws. And as an average voter, when you're trying to look at the map and you're listening to the news reports, this state has these laws, this state allows that, this state allows this. Is it really a good time to maybe start talking about a single standard nationwide?
And Jeremy, I'm going to add there that the Federal Election Commission for most of 2020 election cycle has had no quorum, no ability to enforce election law. Charlie?
Yeah, I think, that's an interesting question. I think we need to have just like a broader discussion of the future of voting, how to make voting as easy and safe as possible. Look, I mean, we're in a very dangerous period here, very, very close to seeing not only votes suppressed, but votes nullified. And I think that's something that we need to confront. And this is one of the most disturbing things about the Republican Party going forward, is I think they've internalized this belief that it's in their interest to have as few people vote as possible. So that's number one. Number two, they're very openly, and apparently many Republicans, very, very comfortable with having state legislatures come in and basically wipe out the votes of the electors. If it was not for some brave state officials, you know, Lord knows what would happen here. So I do understand the point of the question. I would hope that at some point we see some sort of a bipartisan commission that says, okay, does this system work? Can we reform the Electoral College? Can we do something about gerrymandering? Can we find a way to make people confident that their votes count? Can we find a way to assure that the legitimate elections are not delegitimized by conspiracy theories? I'm open to all of those ideas. I mean, absolutely every single one of them. You know, one of the problems with a national standard is there are times when you do rely on the integrity of local officials who are closest to the problem to be able to solve the problem. But everything should be on the table.
Yeah, election integrity is certainly a very vulnerable thing, a vulnerable issue in 2020. That is something we've learned in this election cycle.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of this stuff is so much more fragile than we thought. Look, I do think that, you know, there are people who are legitimately concerned about voter fraud. Okay, and it's legitimate to be concerned about people coming in and stealing your votes. But I wish those same people then would be as concerned about the potential of hundreds of thousands of votes being suppressed or millions of votes being thrown out. You know, this is the moment where there ought to be a bipartisan consensus that everyone should be encouraged to participate in their system. Every vote should be counted. That we ought to make sure that the elections are honest, but also make sure that we are not disenfranchising millions of our fellow Americans. And the way that this has become a partisan issue, I think, is also one of the disturbing developments in American politics.
Let's bring in Jim now in Sheboygan with thoughts. Jim, hi.
Hi, good morning. Sorry. There's so much hate and vitriol out there, you know, on Facebook and in every corner of society and the press and so forth. And you have this cult of personality where pretty much whatever President Trump says, whether it's regarding QAnon or doesn't say about QAnon or COVID being a hoax or Antifa being a terrorist organization, but white supremacists aren't, making these comparisons to, or much like what Putin, they do with Putin, these macho images, riding a horse with no shirt on or playing a tiger, stealing the election. Anything he says to his base is the gospel. So how do you fight this cult of personality? It's, to me, it's terrifying. It's like, how do we get out of this?
That's an important question, and I don't know. And I don't know that anybody else knows. You know, part of it is going to require other people who have their own credibility and their own constituencies standing up and saying, no, this is wrong. This is not true. And so far, they haven't been willing to do that. But this is a dangerous moment for America. And could I just say, he didn't directly address it, but I have to say that I'm increasingly concerned about the potential for violence, for disorder as a result of this. The other night, the Michigan Secretary of State reported that a large group of protesters showed up at her private home, her private residence, and they were armed and shouting obscenities while she and her four-year-old son were trying to watch television. Now, I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. When you show up at somebody's private house with a gun, is there any other interpretation other than you are trying to intimidate that person? The reason I'm really concerned is in this world of alternative realities, many of the president's supporters honestly, sincerely, and completely believe that he has won this election. They believe that he will get a second term. They do. So reality is going to be a terrible disappointment to them. When Joe Biden is sworn in on January 20th, this is going to come as a shock to a lot of folks. So we are coming into a very dangerous area. You know, you may think that, well, it's very, very contentious, but nothing's happened. Well, what happens when people realize that, in fact, everything they've been told about this election is not true? There's going to be a huge amount of disillusionment. And that's the moment that I think that we ought to be concerned about, because there's a lot of loose talk about civil war. There's a lot of loose talk about insurrection. There are people showing up who are armed. What, you know, you don't need a huge number of sociopaths with guns to act out in a deeply emotional, deeply divided society. And plus, when you start throwing around words like enemy of the people and traitor, should you be surprised when people begin to think that their opponents are not just their opponents, they are the enemies? How would you react if you thought that somebody was coming in and stealing your vote or stealing your democracy? So we are in a dangerous moment now, but I don't think that we've fully taken on board how dangerous it's about to become.
Charlie Sykes, former longtime conservative radio talk show host in Milwaukee. His recent book is called How the Right Lost Its Mind. He's giving us his take on the future of the GOP. Let's bring in Annalisa now in Green Bay on what she sees more at the local state level. Annalisa, go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to say it's always good to hear from Charlie Sykes. I really respect his opinions. I just want to mention that I believe that Trump's behavior has a carryover in our legislature in the way that the Republicans refuse to sit down with the governor and talk sensibly about legislation. I mean, they just shut him down. The latest thing now is they decided to put up their own Christmas tree, I guess, in the Capitol. But I think this is very concerning, and I think Trump has something to do with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalisa. What do you see there, Charlie? What is the trickle-down effect to the states?
Well, Wisconsin's a very interesting case because, as you recall, Wisconsin Republicans were not pro-Trump. They were very resistant to him during the primary. In fact, this was one of the states where he suffered his worst defeat. And I think Wisconsin Republicans had a very different non-Trumpian tradition. I mean, this was the state, you know, of Paul Ryan and a variety of other folks, but it's become very, very Trumpy. And there's no question about it that his style of politics has trickled down. We, of course, were deeply divided before he came along. We from Act 10 on, the partisan lines here have been very, very strong. And of course, I was part of all of that, and I need to acknowledge all of that and my own contribution to that sort of thing. The good news is that in Wisconsin, at least there was no serious attempt, interest in overturning the results of the election. But the caller's right. It seems amazing to me that in the face of the coronavirus pandemic, that the Republicans would not be able to come up with any sort of a coherent governing plan. They were more content with basically throwing rocks at the governor, whose leadership I think can be questioned in some areas. But you did see it does feel as if the partisan divide in Wisconsin has rendered state government almost dysfunctional when it comes to this major public health crisis.
Challenging Governor Evers on the stay-at-home order in court, right, on mask-wearing orders, are you surprised at all of the public health response here of Republicans in the crisis?
Well, I'm disappointed that they allowed this to become a partisan issue. Yeah. I think that they made a calculation early on that maybe things weren't so bad in Wisconsin, that somehow we were going to be exempt from what was happening elsewhere. And then we've seen, of course, this huge wave that has hit this state. And there was a while back when I was looking at a map of the country where, you know, at the red spots, where you've seen the same map of coronavirus outbreaks, and we were bright red. You could pick out Wisconsin from a satellite because things had gotten so bad here. And in part, that is because of the failure of public policy, but also it's because of the fact that you had leaders who downplayed the significance of the disease. And I think that was a reflection of the Trump style of politics.
We have political commentator Charlie Sykes as we explore the American conservative movement in these times. What comes next for the GOP? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with political commentator Charlie Sykes about the future of the GOP and the Republican Party in the post-Trump era. Charlie Sykes is editor-at-large of the Political News Network, The Bulwark, and a longtime conservative talk show host in Wisconsin. Let's bring in thoughts from Linda now, who's joining us from Pewaukee. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. I have a question for Mr. Sykes. It seems like the tone of all of these conversations is that President Trump has somehow hijacked the Republican Party, and he now controls it with his so-called cult of personality, that the Republican Party has lost their vision. Could the guests talk about, they haven't lost their vision. President Trump is their vision, and they work very hard to have someone exactly like him in control.
Charlie, what do you think of that sentiment?
Well, first of all, it's certainly true that he didn't seize control of the party. The party acquiesced to him. There's no question about it. I said on a different show that the Republican Party was being held hostage, and somebody said, not really, because they volunteered for this. They signed up for this, and that's true. So the question that the caller is asking is a really complicated one. And I'll be honest with you. I have been wrestling with this for some time. I wrote a book, How the Right Lost Its Mind. And when I sat down after Trump was elected to figure out what had just happened, I originally was thinking, okay, so here you had this black swan event. Donald Trump comes in and takes over an otherwise relatively healthy party and distorts it. And by the time I finished writing, I realized that's not sustainable. The dysfunction in the Republican Party was a pre-existing condition. There were deep problems there. The question is Donald Trump an expression of what the Republican Party always was, or is it a distortion? And I think that's something I have to tell you, I wrestle with. I do think there were alternative paths that the party could have taken. This is a party that could have gone more in the Paul Ryan direction, could have gone in the Mitt Romney direction, could have gone in the direction of a John McCain, instead decided to go with this nationalist populist direction. A lot of the things that Donald Trump has exploited were around the party, but I always thought of them as a recessive gene in the party, as opposed to the dominant strain. But I may have been wrong about that. And that's the big question. I don't know how many of our listeners sort of remember back in the old days of Superman and the Bizarro Superman, where you had the Bizarro image of something. And it looks like it's the same thing, but it's distorted in fundamental ways. And I think that's the problem with Donald Trump, that he's picked up on so many of the themes that sound so familiar to me. I mean, I've heard them for years on talk radio. I've heard them for years on Fox News, and yet he gives them a twist that is uglier, that is dumber, that is crueler. But was the dumbness, the meanness, the cruelty, was it always inherent in that message? I don't think so, but I understand the people who believe that it was always there. I do think that, you know, we can all, as human beings and as political parties, we can go in different directions. If we listen to the better angels of our nature, we head in one direction. If we give in to our more base instincts, that the same person, the same movement can go off in a different direction. And I think that's what's happened with Trump. I think that there was a potential for the conservative movement to be more inclusive, to be more reform-oriented. But what he did was he drew upon some of the ugliest elements, things that I will admit that I had ignored, that I had not fully understood, and he brought them to the fore. So the case that could be made, and I have a good friend named Stuart Stevens who actually ran Mitt Romney's campaign, and he's written a book called It's All a Lie. He said none of the things the conservatives claimed they actually believed in were real. Now, I don't go as far as he does, but I respect his point of view. And I think that on issues like race, issues on, xenophobia, issues involving gender, all of those things, you need to go back and go, okay, did we really understand who we were? Was this always there? So is Donald Trump really an expression of sort of the ugly, bizarro id of this political party that we didn't understand?
Groups like the Lincoln Project, groups like Republican Voters Against Trump, have tried to nurture this alternative movement, alternative conservative movement, alternative gene, if you will. How do you see that battle being fought as the country moves on from the Trump presidency?
Well, I don't know. And I don't know because I don't know that the political party is going to move on from the Trump presidency. I think some of us were hoping that the election would be so decisive that Republicans would go, okay, we're done with that. Let's have an autopsy. Let's have an exorcism. Let's move on to a different vision. But they appear frozen at the moment. And if he runs in 2024, or even if he says he's running in 2024, then there's going to be no moving on. Now, having said that, I think that the vast majority of Americans are still, leaving the Republican Party aside, are exhausted by Donald Trump. I think they're going to find the just fundamental normalcy and decency of Joe Biden to be immensely refreshing. What, of course, is concerning is how much effort the Trumpists and Republicans are putting into discrediting and destroying the Biden presidency before it begins. Look, here's the moment where you step back and you go, country over party. That there's part of the ritual of American democracy where we root for the new president, even if we disagree with him, even if we think we're going to fight him on certain issues.
Give them a fighting chance.
Give him a fighting chance, right? Because we need, especially right now, we need this presidency to succeed at least in solving the problems of the country as opposed to kneecapping the president. And I wonder whether or not we've just become, our politics has become so toxic and so negative that we don't even want to have a debate. We would just simply rather burn down.
Charlie Sykes with us, founder, editor-at-large of The Bulwark. We're looking at the future, what the future holds for the Republican Party. Let's go to Dan now from Maguanago. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Dan.
When did you, can you even believe that we came to a time right now that you are labeled a hero in a Republican Party when you admit to an obvious fact?
I actually wrote about that yesterday. It shouldn't take courage that when you stand up and you say 2 + 2 = 4, oh my goodness, this guy is a hero. That gives you a sense of the moral atmosphere of the Republican Party, that when you just do the right thing, it seems really extraordinary. Well, you know, I mean, in a land where nobody has a spine, the person who can stand upright, right, is king.
Right. I am blown away by Ron Johnson, our senator here. I mean, when he's not busy, you know, as the chair of the Homeland Security Committee, he's not busy hawking hydroxychloroquine, or he's not pushing Russian propaganda. Today, he's going to feature an anti-vaxxer, and that'll really help out the situation.
So I think what Dan is wanting to know here is, where is Senator Johnson in all of this?
Well, I have to say from just a personal basis how fundamentally disappointed I am in Ron Johnson. And the two things that he mentioned, I think, are indicative of that. We have this massive crisis that we're dealing with right now, and Johnson is going to be featuring an anti-vax activist at a moment when the responsible leaders in this country should be doing everything possible to, not spread misinformation. I mean, if there are legitimate concerns about the vaccine, fine, but that's not what's going on here. And so Ron Johnson has been one of those who I think has been, you know, transformed by this Trumpian vortex. And I have to say, I'm very disappointed. Wisconsin has a long tradition of independent maverick senators, you know, going back to William Proxmire, even Russ Feingold, leaders like Gaylord Nelson. And I had at one time thought that Ron Johnson was going to be in that tradition. And obviously I was very, very wrong, or something has changed rather dramatically.
Charlie, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Charlie Sykes, founder and editor at large of The Bulwark, conservative political journal, former longtime conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee. Just ahead, stay with us for 1A. In the 70s, Beatles frontman John Lennon was a global icon. If you recall, 1A explores John Lennon's life and legacy 40 years on. That is next. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.